Hello, Brodies and Brodettes of the world. My name is Caleb Walgren, and you're listening to Season 5, Episode 3 of Brody Sports Talk. My name is Caleb Walgren, and I am joined by none other than Derek Rusnick. Derek, how you doing today?
Hello, and welcome to the podcast. I am so very happy to be getting together, talking some sports. And it's a great week, and let's get going.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and get things started, as the deadline for franchise tags to get extended came and passed, and it was pretty noticeable because there was three players on the tag that had not yet agreed to a long-term contract. They're big name running backs. In Saquon Barkley of the New York Football Giants, Josh Jacobs of the Las Vegas Raiders, and Tony Pollard of the Dallas Cowboys. Now, typically, these are not three teams that I really like talking about or discussing how they do their business, but that's how we're going to get this Brody Bites episode going today. We're starting with the NFL. It's an NFL podcast. Derek, what are you thinking as far as the running back market is concerned? Do you feel like anyone was slighted here? Where are you wanting to go and kind of jump off with these three guys?
Okay, so for me, the list starts at Josh Jacobs, goes to Saquon, and then goes to Tony Pollard. Now, I can't wait to see what Tony Pollard does if he plays this year and all that. I don't want to slight him. But Josh Jacobs is the focal point of the Las Vegas Raiders. That name just is not good in my throat. And Saquon is a big part of the Giants offense and what they need. What it looks like to me is that for the foreseeable future, everyone is going to pencil in their fourth round pick to be in the draft to be a running back. And if you are particularly spicy, that might go up to the third round. We might have a Bijan situation, something like that that comes along. But for most of the 32 teams moving forward, you're just going to pencil in a running back because they seem to be so interchangeable. And that's unfortunate. I mean, they're not going to give big money on a rookie contract because they're going to be lower round guys. And so you're going to have your rookie contract. You might get franchise tagged for 2 years if you're lucky, which is the only way you're going to get your money. And then, you know, a backup role or a severely reduced salary role, as I don't see moving forward a running back getting either big money or a longer term deal, even at lower money. So honestly, I think this affects the NFL in 6 to 10 years when guys who are good runners, who can play the running back position, move over to either other sports or they move over to different positions in the on the football field, just so they can do stuff. Can you be a slot receiver? Can you be a safety or a cornerback? You know, there's different ways that you could, you know, if you're a bigger guy like a Derrick Henry, can you be a linebacker? Stuff like that. Because I think this is going to have a chilling effect on guys coming up, because why would you risk CTE or why would you risk getting hit in the head 40 times a game when they're not going to pay you the money that you're worth? So this is the match that has been lit that lights the fuse on blowing up the running back position in the NFL. That's my soapbox. Caleb, tell me what you think.
I mean, I think that you're right. I think that in general, this is something where you're looking at it and going, something's got to give one way or another. The salary cap has kept moving up, but the top money for running backs doesn't. I think that in general, like, especially if you're looking at these athletes, someone like Josh Jacobs, who's 25, so young. Yes, he has 4 years in the NFL, but he is so, so very young. You could easily give him at least 2 or 3 year deal, less than the franchise tag, and see if he would sign it. I don't claim to know what was happening in all the negotiations. I'm not trying to sit here and say that I'm a contract guru by any means, but it was reported that Josh Jacobs was sitting in the Raiders parking lot waiting to hear if a deal was done so he could go in and sign it. And unlike Josh Jacobs, the Raiders dropped the ball on this one, which I'm sure Derek loves hearing. But, you know, in general, you've got to be able to keep him for his 25, 26, 27 seasons, keep him there for a while, make sure that you're staying with him as part of the future, because let's face it, you brought in Jimmy G, and Derek and I might disagree on this a little bit, but Jimmy G in and of himself is not, he's not going to go out there and pull the team to a Super Bowl win. He needs to have the right pieces around him. He needs to have the right people. Jacobs can be one of those people. Devontae Adams can be one of those people. But they got rid of a lot of talent. Same issue with Saquon, kind of, in my opinion. You got the extension for Daniel Jones, but you only have Saquon for this year. We don't really know what Daniel Jones looks like without Saquon, but I don't think it's going to be pretty. I will say, and Derek, I think you know where I tend to go with this. If you have a reason that you don't want to extend Josh Jacobs, it's that you had him touch the ball 393 times last year. 340 rushes, 53 catches. That's a ton of touches. There's a reason that you're not wanting to extend Saquon. You're looking at his injury history, primarily during the COVID season when he played 2 games. Most of the other years, he's played 13-plus games. He's got a couple of 16s. Like, he may not be the most durable, but he is explosive when he's there. And one that I think you could argue is interesting here is the Cowboys kind of having that about face where they got rid of Zeke. And even though Pollard has way less touches than anyone else that we're going to talk about, I mean, he only has 6 career starts. Like, you're talking about someone who hasn't even had 200 carries in a season. And even though he is, you know, just 26, he can't even get a long-term deal. Like, he doesn't have the wear and tear that the other two running backs have. And you can't even give him a couple years. It's just interesting.
I don't understand any of it. Like, we're literally talking about guys who are a good portion of the offense. And these guys know your offense. These guys know where to run, and these guys know where the holes are gonna be. And you're not taking a chance on it. Now, I mean, if you look up the top 10 offenses of last year, only 2 of them have anything to do with having a pretty decent running back. And that's the Vikings, they're number 7 on the list of, and then the Cowboys, because they had Zeke. Just when it comes to yardage, you know, you don't really have to have a huge, great, awesome running back to win world championships. I mean, look at the Chiefs, look at the Eagles and the Bengals and the Bills. I mean, you look at those top 4 teams and you can see where the NFL's going. I don't agree with it because, I think that offensive linemen and running backs are people too.
Absolutely, they are. I feel like it's just very, very odd right now where we're at in the NFL. Like, something has got to give. There's only a few running backs that are making really more than the franchise tag. And even with those, like, Joe Mixon would have been one of them, and he took a salary cap cut within this last week too, so that he could stay with the Bengals. So the only people you're really talking about that are up there are McCaffrey, Kamara, who you could argue maybe shouldn't have that contract now, but the Saints were overspending with everyone because that's what the Saints do. Derrick Henry, Nick Chubb, and Joe Mixon. And to be fair, Nick Chubb had a 3-year, $36 million contract. So it's not like he's getting a ton or a long deal. It's, they said, hey, we can get you for a few. That's the type of contract I'm kind of talking about. Like, why can't we get, even if it was like 3 years, 40 mil, you know, 13 mil a year, you don't have to guarantee everything. You're going to want Saquon and Jacobs and Pollard back next year, even if they get hurt this year. Like, do something where they get some guaranteed money next year. Like, are they not wanting it? Like, I just don't understand where the line is, I guess, Derek.
Your guess is as good as mine.
Well, let's go ahead and switch it up because it is the middle of July. The grass is green in a lot of places. And the teams are starting to report for their mini camps because the Hall of Fame game between the Jets and the Browns is on August 3rd. And I'm sure that we'll be excited to start watching Hard Knocks and things like that with the Jets when that comes out. But it is just a great time to think about football season returning. With all of that, Derek, there was a signing that happened recently. Of course, we just talked about how the signings for running backs were slim, but let's talk about a wide receiver who is making a return to his old division in DeAndre Hopkins as he has joined the Tennessee Titans to catch passes from Will Levis. I'm Dean Ryan Tannehill. Derek, what did you think when you heard that Hopkins finally had signed on the dotted line with someone?
What in the absolute doggy slobbers is this all about? I mean, there are 31 other teams that are probably a better fit for this man, and you want to go with the Titans. Cool. Derrick Henry, who at any moment could turn into a pumpkin again. I mean, we haven't seen it over the last few years. Thank the good Lord in heaven. But do we really think that Ryan Tannehill or / Will Levis, depending on how things go this year, is going to be a really great quarterback this year? Where do you think he's going to get a bunch of yards? And do you really think the Titans are going to win not just their division, not just the AFC, but a world championship? Because, you know, the Jaguars are probably the better team in your division. You still have the Chiefs, the Bills, the Bengals, who have been to the upper echelon more than you have, more than Titans have. And you still have to worry about all those same teams winning the Super Bowl this year. So does he think that he is the one missing piece for the Titans? And that's all of a sudden going to make them world champions? Like, you could have went to the Chiefs for a year and probably won a ring and just been like, cool, ting ting, we're good. Or you could have went to the Bills. I'm not sure if they actually have a spot for them, but you could have went to the Bills and probably made them significantly better enough that they win a coin toss. I don't understand it. Because it's not a huge contract. It's not like he's making $200 million or something like that. It's kind of a much more normal deal. So I don't know where this came from, what happened, and fingers crossed for him. That's all I'm going to say.
I mean, 2 years, $26 million. It's not bad money. I mean, especially talking about all the running backs that are not getting paid. DeAndre Hopkins is at least getting something, as he is, you know, past 30. I think that there's a few things here that Hopkins can bring that make it an interesting story for Hopkins. I don't know that I consider him a title threat on the Titans, but one, he's going to be the clear target getter in the Titans offense. He comes in, you know, Treylon Burks did okay last year. Chigi Okonkwo, easy for you to say. He showed up last year and he was good at tight end. But they clearly missed AJ Brown. DeAndre Hopkins is here to be an older version of that type of player to go out and catch passes from Ryan Tannehill. I also think hey, Caleb, that
can I borrow your Titans Super Bowl shirt? I want to wear it to work tomorrow. The Titans didn't win anything with A.J. Brown. What do you think a older version of A.J. Brown is going to win them anything?
I think that...
Oh, Treylon Burks is still there. I mean, why wouldn't you give him the ball?
I mean, it's the same reason that the GM got fired last year and that they are still trying to win with Vrabel, even though he doesn't really do the offense. It's messy. I think that it's fair to say that it's messy. You know, Malik Willis, who they drafted last year, is now third on the depth chart, and they couldn't even trust him. They brought in someone from a practice squad of another team when it was playoff time last year. Like, things are not all sunny in Tennessee. So I think that in general, I like Hopkins there for him. Getting some revenge against the Texans, potentially getting to face them twice a year when they had traded him out of the division. So I like that element of familiarity. But you and I both agree. Tannehill goes down. You don't want this to be a Levis thing. Derrick Henry's hurt. We're all of a sudden trusting a different rookie. Ty J. Spears, they did take a third round running back for the record, Derek. Ty J. Spears from Tulane. Exactly. You know, to come in and carry the load with the fourth round pick from 2022, Hassan Haskins, also there on the roster. So I like where your head's at, Derek, as far as these third or fourth round running backs. It's interesting. I don't know that I think that it is massive waves. But I feel like it's attempting to swing big, kind of like when they traded for Julio Jones. I don't know that it's going to be big, but they're attempting it.
Cool.
Derek, anything else that you have about minicamps or DeAndre Hopkins before we switch up sports?
The Hall of Fame game is August the 3rd. NFL preseason is almost here. Like, two more weeks-ish, and then we get to talk about, I mean, third or fourth string players playing in preseason games and how rookies look. I'm so excited.
It is good. It will be good for it to be back. I really wish Aaron Rodgers would play one play in the Hall of Fame game and then just be like, all right, I got the start. I'm walking off the field. Yeah. Even if he just takes a knee on the first play.
Okay. That's what I'm saying. Just like take the ball, hand it off to someone other than Breece Hall. And then, hey, look, I got the start. Bye.
This is the stadium that I'll be enshrined in a few years. Thank you. Okay. So, but let's go to a different sport. It does feature a little bit of green, but that is the grass. And the ball is actually yellow. It is Wimbledon. We are talking about the beautiful fields over in the London area, as it was two very interesting finals. We had a final between Marketa Vondrousova and Ons Jabeur. personally, anytime we can have a true Cinderella story like Vonda Strova, it is very exciting. Apparently she has gone and gotten a strawberry tattoo because she had a bet with her coach that if she won a Grand Slam that she was getting a tattoo. So good for her. Apparently more people should be making tattoo bets with Wimbledon. I don't know if that's actually true or if that's just interesting. Ons Jabeur, of course, it was her third loss in a major final. I want to see her get one. I want to see her get one. It just was not this one. Derek, before we go over to the men's, what did you think of Vonda Strova and Jabeur?
So I am a big fan of Ons Jabeur. She is such so fun to watch on the court. I like seeing this new, I don't want to say new crop of younger players, but because Ons is such a veteran in the sport as of now. And it's really surprising to me how young some of these people are when they start playing tennis or get to professional tennis. And then, you know, like what is considered quote unquote old in that sport. But to have an unseeded, the first unseeded ladies champion, to have that it's really neat. It really does show the parity of tennis in 2023, that you can have a really good 3-week span of tennis and win Wimbledon. I mean, that is something that it goes down in the record books. I mean, it just goes down at one point in time, I won Wimbledon, and that's something they can never take away from you. So I was all smiles after that one. And the thing is, it wasn't a back and forth slugfest. She won in straight sets, like puts Ons Jabeur to bed, basically. She was like, hey, I'm going to come win this. Look at me. And it was great.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be interesting because on the men's side, it was about as chalky as it could be. World number one, Carlos Alcaraz, going up against Wimbledon legend, only second to Roger Federer, and Novak Djokovic, who just had a thrilling, thrilling match. Djokovic won the first set 6-1. Alcaraz stormed back to win the second set 7-6 in a tiebreaker. Then Alcaraz took the third set 6-1. Djokovic stormed back to win 6-3 in the fourth set before we had the ultimate fifth set. Winner takes all, and Alcaraz won that 6-4, winning his first Wimbledon. He is still only 20 years old. He won the U.S. Open last year. He's coming here to see if he can repeat. World number one. Like I said, he's so young at 20 years of age. And he's not, like, he'll be turning 21 around the time of the French Open next year, Derek. Like, and he already was in the semis there this past year where he had hurt himself and lost to Djokovic in that matchup. So anything can happen. I think that it is going to be interesting to see what he does and how he bounces back in the future, because, you know, Federer may not be there, Nadal may not be there, but Djokovic has got a new rival coming, and it is the youngster versus the old guy. Alcaraz is definitely coming for him. What do you think?
I'm going to say he's the second best Spaniard I've ever seen play tennis.
And the first best, I'm just kidding. Yeah, that is clearly Rafael Nadal.
It's clearly Nadal. Come on. No, it's really great. It's kind of like that old saying, like, me and Tom Brady have 7 Super Bowl rings, you know, combined. And so, you know, he's kind of like, oh, me and Nadal have of this many Grand Slam titles, because he's won just so many. And, you know, this is a really great thing for Spain, and really showing what what you have in support for tennis in that country, and it's great. It's just this was a Wimbledon final on both sides that was a made me smile. This was a good Wimbledon final.
Absolutely. Well, Derek, we're over across the pond, the Open is coming up this week. Let's go ahead and do a 3-player each draft to see who we think will win the event. I will let you have first pick since I am more of the golf dude. Derek, who do you want to take at number one overall here in this Open player draft?
So I begged and pleaded for the first pick in this draft is because I want to select my favorite golfer of all time. And Caleb has very kindly given me that pick. So the first overall, the best golfer in the history of golf swings, that's Rory McIlroy. That is my number one pick. He's coming off of a win from last week. He's placed himself really well into the Open. And so I think he's going to win this.
He also has that dude perfect luck on his side. I don't know if you watched that video of them setting golf records, Derek, but I highly recommend it. Worth the 12 minutes or so of your life. I think that one of Rory's records that he broke with the dude perfect guys was longest golf shot ever hit with a putter. I think it was 255 yards.
There you go.
So don't mess with Rory. While I do not, I wish I had that pick, but I was kind. I'm going to go ahead and take Jon Rahm because I have a lot of respect for him. And speaking of Spaniards who are good at doing things, I think Jon Rahm has a definite chance here at the Open. And I'm going to go ahead and take a player that just always deserves. Well, I'm going to take someone that has been hot lately that I know Derek really likes. He represents America's brightest orange, and that is Ricky Fowler.
My number two pick. No.
I'm slightly sorry, but I also, you took Rory, and I felt like this was the only way I could somewhat be remotely even in taking someone on the way back.
That's fine.
All right. So you got the next two, Derek, and then I'll take the final pick.
Okay. So, going with my second pick is going to be Bryson DeChambeau. Big fan of Bryson. I just want to be able to say his name a bunch, and so that's why he's going to be my second pick. And I did not realize that I was going to get this third pick. I have someone in mind, but I want to double check.
I'll let you know if they're in the field or anything, Derek. I got you.
No, I've got the field in front of me here. Okay. I'm going to go for a little bit of a dark horse here. I'm going to go. There it is. Jason Day. Is not exactly a dark horse in so much as, like, he's not going to win something. I mean, he's won quite a bit of things, but has not won something recently. And I'm going to go with Jason Day as my pick. So I have Rory, I have Bryson, and I have Jason.
Absolutely. I'm going to go ahead and just take the world number one here at the sixth overall pick because why not? Scottie Scheffler. Yeah. I've heard he's good. I do feel like he plays better earlier in the year, but I can't feel bad when I'm getting the world number one at pick six. Yeah. So I'll take my team of Rahm, Ricky, and Scottie. And Derek, of course, has Rory, Bryson, and Jason. He's just thinking the sun will be up on that grass and it's going to be beautiful for his team.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking as I as I certainly think that the day will break and I'm going to win our draft.
You did win it last year when we did the open player draft. I think Rory was the best of all of the players then too.
I know what I'm doing here. I watched the crooked sticks.
Let's go ahead and let's talk about the fact that the Women's World Cup is coming up. The U.S. won this event in 2015 and in 2019. They are going to go ahead and start this one. It is being dual hosted, Derek, by both New Zealand and Australia. I actually saw something recently that said New Zealand is potentially giving away some of the tickets for free because they're just not getting that much interest. So if you book a flight to New Zealand to go watch some of the matches, you just let me know, okay?
There you go.
Okay, so in general, I'm excited because the U.S. women are the number one team. This is arguably the sport that women, well, that the U.S. has been the best at as a national team. Outside of potentially like basketball in the last decade or two, we continue to be a threat despite the fact that most of the teams that are strong are a lot of the European teams. So the U.S. got drawn into Group E, where they will face off against Vietnam on Friday night at 8 o'clock Central Time. In Auckland. We also get another match at 8 o'clock our time on the 26th, which will be a week from the day this releases. And then if you're really interested, you can watch them play on August 1st, the Tuesday at 2 a.m. to see the finale of that group. I know Derek is going to be up early with his coffee to watch that one. Can't miss a single Women's World Cup match. But the U.S. has been hurt. They're struggling a little bit. Kristen Press tore her ACL for the fourth time. She's going to need her fourth surgery in the last 13 months for it. So quick recovery to you, Kristen. Derek, do you expect the U.S. to do the three-peat? And when they do, what kind of dance are you going to do?
So I think they are going to three-peat. They are hands over fist, the best team in the field. And, you know, they should be able to do this. I read something and I don't want our listeners to kind of hold me to it, but, cause it could have just been rumors, but the U.S. team has, like four or five ladies that are, when they win their third, is going to have the most World Cups of any player, any women's player ever. And, you know, it's going to be, you know, five different people who are going to have that, not just like one person who's been here, been really good for a long time. And then the U.S. is also going to have the most first-time World Cup players of any team ever. So basically they have really experienced and tenured players, and then a whole bunch of new players, which means if they get the experience in this World Cup, they're just reloading. They're not, we're going to take one off. We have to, you know, to restock the team or whatever. They're just going to march through all again. The, is it NWSL, Caleb? Yes.
National Women's Soccer League.
Yeah, so that has been really fun to watch as well. And I think that is showing a lot of what the U.S. women have to offer in the World Cup. There are some really great players on those teams and some really great players on our World Cup team. So I think they are going to, and if they do, I'm probably going to do the Brandi Chastain, rip off my jersey, and dive through the grass, as that is one of the first sports memories I ever had, was watching that and watching the Women's World Cup.
Do you know who, Derek, so I know we've talked about players like Alyssa Thompson, who's 18, clearly mm-hmm. making her debut. You know about another one that has a famous basketball connection, correct?
So I didn't Rodman's daughter, Dennis Rodman's daughter?
Yeah, Trinity Rodman, who is 21, yeah. Also has a chance to go make her debut as a striker in this tournament. So it will be interesting to see her get some playing time out there as a forward, because we've got a lot of youth up there at the front if we choose to use it. And in my opinion, I kind of hope that we do, just to get them some great young World Cup experience and get some goals in, because when you've got that speed, there's you can't train speed. You either have it or you don't. So I think that some of those are going to be really interesting to just watch and see how everything plays out.
I'll agree with you on that one. I cannot wait, and I'm going to be rooting the entire time.
Well, that is all for this Brody Bites episode. If you think that Derek and I are crazy and that there's no way that the U.S. women are going to get out of Group E, let us know on Twitter at Brody Talk. Well, we'd love to take your comments there. Also, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. Football season is coming. Like Derek said, the Hall of Fame game is 15 days away. Oh, yeah. Like, it is a beautiful thing that it will be here, and it can't come faster. Like, it can't come fast enough. So if you've enjoyed it, thank you. We appreciate you. But on behalf of Derek, my name is Caleb Walgren. We are going to go ahead and sign out, and y'all have a good one. Bye.
Bye, guys.